the in-between times. Sometimes we're living in the in-between times when we're no longer who we used to be, but we've not yet arrived at our next stage either. In January 2004, I took my daughter to see Bette Midler perform. For me, this was the third time. I remembered seeing her perform in New York City in the 1970s, and then again in Los Angeles in the early 1990s. The years have passed, and so much has changed. Taking my daughter to see the show, I felt like I was passing on to her a beautiful gift that had meant a lot to me. Midler's music had stirred my soul, and now it would perhaps stir hers. It was interesting to see how Bette had changed and how she had not changed. On one hand, jokes that played well 10 or 25 years ago do not play the same way now. The world is entirely different, and so are we. But the change that I noticed most was in Midler herself. She clearly cares deeply about people and is herself a very serious person. Her commentary on the state of the world, and in particular American politics, was searing and real. It was courageous even, given that some in her audience would surely not have agreed with her. Yet I could sense an angst in her that seemed to me a poignant reflection of the state of our generation. We're still telling jokes, but nothing seems all that funny anymore. What the evening impressed upon me was that we can't go home again. The 70s, 80s, and 90s of the Divine Miss M no longer exist. They were a fun point in time, like a really cool party. But the party has ended, and the world, as she pointed out, is no longer safe for any of us. We were like children in those days, and we are children no more. I sensed she was not entirely kidding when she said she'd taken a couple years off to suffer through her menopause in silence. I could see her conundrum because she, like so many of us, is neither here nor there. She's no longer who she was, though she can mimic it brilliantly, but she's not yet who she is becoming. She can still do the other things, Dolores the Fish and Clementine and Ernie, but I sensed they weren't quite as true to her soul anymore. Perhaps that's just my projection, but it was how I felt. She, like so many of us, now seems in a middle zone where real change happens. We're spiritually too big at this point to fit into the attitudinal clothes we used to wear, yet the new ones are still hanging in the closet. When you take off one set of clothes, you're naked for a minute before you put on another. When age is seen in a purely material context, you sort of wonder if there is another set of clothes. Yet in a spiritual context, there is no phase of life, because there is no point in the universe where God is not. We are always on the road to the next stage, whether we're days old or decades old. The spirit of life is not diminished by time. In the present moment, our task is to let go what was, with love or even sorrow, and embrace what emerges next from the mind of God. When we have seen the world, and understood the world, and felt our souls grow sick of the world, it's time for us to become children again. We look to God to give us new life when the old one has begun to die. Playing our part. There was a time when the thought of changing the world didn't really seem all that hard. When you're young, it's fairly easy to embrace the notion that we will someday cast away all problems from the world. Our bodies are young and voluptuous, our energy endless, our opportunities seemingly infinite. We think it's only a matter of time before all problems will bow before the power of our efforts, which are, after all, so impressive. Yet life has a way of wearing us down. You learn through often painful means that in the face of your prodigious intellect and energy, evil does not just step aside. It's tempting to succumb to the cynicism of age when you see how often things do not change, especially when the most recalcitrant factors, the most immovable mountains, seem to be within yourself. Our attitudinal, not just our physical muscles, become less flexible with age. It's amazing how much fatigue enough disappointments can cause. It takes energy to change, and sometimes our energy is in short supply. You can feel the pressure once you reach middle age to simply go along with a status quo that's hardly what you hoped for, but it's here, so what the hell? Jesus said of Lazarus, "He is not dead, he is only sleeping." And so are we. There lies in most of us the accumulated frustration of our unlived dreams and the squelched desire to spread our wings and fly above the worldly limitations that hold us back. These painful energies are not automatically transmuted except through prayer and surrender and holy relationships. They attach themselves to our spiritual organs of faith and hope, taunting us with lines like, "You're too old," "You blew it," or "You're washed up," and at times they seem to be backed by evidence. To say to those voices, "Satan, get thee behind me," is not mumbo-jumbo or wishful thinking. Spiritually, it's our power and strength. Angels and demons. During the wee hours of the morning, both angels and demons take clearer shape. The glories of life as well as its terrors are clearer before dawn has broken. Once the light of day casts its spell upon us, deeper meanings, sometimes obvious only hours before, are easily forgotten. We fall prey to the mindset of the world. Growing older is a form of night, full of angels and demons as well. We are closer to wisdom, yet we're closer to death. It takes a lot of climbing to get a clear perspective, climbing above the thoughts and feelings that would keep us tied to the ground we have trod before. The ground of yesterday is barren now. Its drama is over. Only the present, lived in fullness and intensity, holds the promise of a new tomorrow. Night after night, I have lain awake, my eyes having popped open for no apparent reason, my body unwilling to fall back asleep, my hormones not feeling like they're mine anymore. For a while, I said the usual things to myself. "I hate this. I must have my estrogen checked again. I need to buy more melatonin. This will feel so awful tomorrow." Yet finally, I noticed that more was going on. I'm that age, so I'm having a hard time sleeping, with such a hand-me-down notion, so devoid of dimension, so superficial in its interpretation of my own experience. From a spiritual perspective, these hours were not tired. They were deeply awake. The Course in Miracles says, "The rest we seek, we will find not from sleeping, but from waking." In those hours that I've lain so inconveniently awake, I think I've begun at last to know what awakened means. Noting the witching hour, 4:15 a.m., at which I awake more often than not, stealing outside to look at the stars and marvel at the moon, I return again to my ancient self. In those hours, I'm not a menopausal nutcase. I'm a magical witch, and I can feel it in my bones. New beginnings. When aspects of you that used to work have peaked now, when situations that used to seem exciting have lost their edge, and so have you, when a phrase like "over the hill" suddenly means something after all, then you are ready for rebirth. It's time to face that terrifying void, not in resignation, but in faith. For this void is the womb for a new emerging self. From the acid of regrets over things that did and did not happen, to our tenacious hopes for what might still yet occur, a profound transformative alchemy is at work within us. We're not done, not until God rings the bell. And that bell, as we know, might be far, far off. I heard a television interviewer ask Clint Eastwood about his marriage to a woman decades younger than he. I loved his wry answer, "If she dies, she dies." Indeed, who knows who's leaving when? In 1994, my sister died at the age of 44. The next year, my father died at 85. Go figure. So what are we to do with the rest of our lives should we choose a path of spiritual rebirth? First, we must consciously choose to live them. Hidden beliefs are dangerous, and the belief that the best years of my life are behind me is a powerful agent, not of change, but of inertia. Whether or not we consciously embrace the thought, many of us do think it, and thoughts like that can be changed. If we primarily identify with external realities, as we've been trained to do by the ego's thought system, then it's hard to look forward to better years after a certain number of them have passed. Yet this is our challenge, to see beyond the world and thus invoke new beginnings. A child grows whether or not he or she chooses to. At a certain point in life, however, we grow only if we choose to. And in that choice lies a choice not only for ourselves, but indeed for everyone. Deeper with the years. Visiting London in the fall of 2003, I went to the Royal Academy of Arts to view Andrew Lloyd Webber's collection of Pre-Raphaelite paintings. One of them, a picture called Silver and Gold, shows a beautiful young woman walking with an elderly lady. I stared at the painting for quite a while, remembering what it was like to be the young woman in the picture, like a part I had acted in a play that had closed and would not be opening again. I'm certainly not yet the elderly woman, but rather I'm perched somewhere between the two. I can now relate to the older woman I will hopefully be someday, as much as to the younger woman I no longer am. And what is striking about the picture to me is the seriousness with which the older woman is listening to the younger one. Is the younger woman her granddaughter? Her charge? One doesn't know, but she clearly cares deeply about the younger woman, who seems to be drinking in her attention. It is part of the younger woman's initiation into the mysteries that she experiences the goodwill of a woman who has passed through her own youth and now cares about someone else's. My mother once said to me, "You know, Marianne, whatever age you are, you experienced all the ages before it." She had probably said that in response to something I had patronizingly said, indicating that youth was something she couldn't possibly understand. And my father, at around the age of 80, said to me, "It's funny. When you're old, you don't feel old." My conclusion is that age, while in an eternal sense is truly nothing, in a material sense is truly something. And I honor both, since both are mine. I had a personal assistant who was 20 years younger than me, and sometimes when I would see her coming down the hall, I would swear I was looking at a younger version of myself. I enjoyed her joy at things I hardly even noticed anymore. Her amazement that Cameron Diaz makes more than $2 million to star in a movie, and her excitement about going to Paris for the first time. Watching her was like a chance to say hello to a me I no longer was, and I knew she too was staring down a hall toward a woman she might one day be. None of us has control of the parts we're cast in during the ever-changing drama of life. You're the young Turk when you're the young Turk. You're the aging crone when you're the aging crone. You're the innocent in love when you're the innocent in love. And you're jaded when you're jaded. Yet something in us is none of those things. Who we truly are is changeless in the mind of God. We're just experiencing different corners of the universe to learn its dimensions, its lessons, before going on to another. I don't think death is the end of our lives, for as surely as we're headed out of here, we're heading toward some new adventure. I assume the wheel of karma keeps turning until every point God wanted to make, He's had a chance to make, and He can see we got them all. It's important to give up yesteryear when yesteryear is gone. I remember complaining to my best friend that when I lecture, I'm not as fast as I once was, not as snap, crackle, and pop in my delivery. His response was helpful, that many in my audience aren't as fast now either, that they too are no longer as snap, crackle, and pop, and it would seem disingenuous if I tried to be. Age slows us down, but it takes us deeper, into realms no less fertile spiritually than those we inhabited before. As the years go by, we lose some of the outer sparkle that so gloriously infused our youth, but an inner sparkle emerges that we never had before. Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "As I age, my beauty steals inward." And it's more than just our beauty that steals inward. The entire richness of life begins to burrow underground as we age, no less magical, just not as visible to the physical eye. In fact, in a way, it's actually more magical, for magic is of the invisible planes. Thinking about my young assistant's excitement about going to Paris for the first time, I thought about my history with that city vis-a-vis the men I've known. The years that take a woman from youth to maturity are marked emotionally by her history and love. There are phases of Paris, like there are phases of certain relationships. Getting ready for it, being there, and remembering what it was like. When I was young, I once went to Paris with a man who enchanted me as much as the city did. Our struggle to make the trip happen, and the times we had there once we did, are memories I'll hold dear forever. But decades later, there was another man, and when the subject of Paris came up between us, one quick glance said it all. Both of us had been there, I could tell, and both of us had loved there, I could feel it. Both of us had had dreams come true there, and both of us had had dreams that died there. We didn't even have to have the discussion. So clear it was in that one split-second look that both of us knew all sides of it. I realized then that where we had gone in that moment, not in spite of the years we've lived, but clearly because of them, was a place more enchanting than Paris.